Satanic Panic was a period of mass hysteria during the 1980s and 90s in which people believed that the satanic cults were infiltrating society and committing horrendous crimes. This fear was perpetuated by the media, religious figures, and law enforcement officials who spread false information about satanic cult activities. The origins of the Satanic Panic can be tracked back to a few key events in history. In the late 1970s, a series of books and films about Satanism were released, which helped to fuel public fear. Additionally, several high-profile cases involving purported satanic activity further stoked public paranoia. By the 1980s, this fear had reached its peak, with widespread reports of ritualistic abuse and other acts supposedly committed by satanic cults. The satanic panic had fear-reaching consequences for many individuals who were falsely accused of being involved with devil worship or other forms of occult activity. It also had a lasting impact on popular culture, as horror films and books capitalize on public fears surrounding Satanism and witchcraft. One of the events was the rise of evangelicalism. Evangelicals utilized radio before World War II to reach Americans with their message. During the war, they founded the Far East Broadcasting Company and Trans World Radio, the first of several stations to transmit abroad. Evangelists like Billy Graham, Oral Roberts, and others were among the first to recognize television's promise. The Christian Broadcasting Network, the first Christian television network, was established in 1960. Later, the Trinity Broadcasting Network and LaCie Broadcasting were established to produce content for the evangelical community. The evangelical movement had substantial growth in the 1980s and 90s. The satanic panic was at an all-time high at this period. In the summer of 1969, a rash of killings committed by the Manson Group shook the country. That same year, Anton LaVey published The Satanic Bible. The Exorcist, a best-selling book that came out in 1971, was then quickly followed by the blockbuster success of the Exorcist movie, based on the book, in 1973. The rise in interest in the occult also corresponded with a series of highly famous serial killer cases that occurred in the 1970s, including those of the Alphabet Killer and the Zodiac Killer, both of whom followed ritualistic patterns in their murders but were never apprehended. The evangelical movement and a literal belief in angels and demons were on the rise. Preachers like Jerry Falwell and his Moral Majority was founded in 1979 and gained prominence across the country, passing along a literal fire and brimstone style of Christianity. And with all of this, the evangelical community helped fuel the fear, helped push the fear of the satanic panic in the media, in their own communities, and, of course, later was picked up by the news outlet. But let's get into another key factor, D&D. In the late 1970s and early 1980s, Dungeons & Dragons had been growing in popularity amongst teenagers. But of course, we have a tragic story. On August 15, 1979, a young man by the name of James Dallas Egbert, a student at Michigan State University, vanished from his dorm room. He attempted suicide but recovered, and later, he was discovered at a friend's house. He then attempted consuming a cyanide compound, however, this attempt also failed. However, on August 16, 1980, James did, in fact, suffer a self-inflicted gunshot wound and passed away. What's the connection here, you ask? Well, D&D was his favorite game. It was later claimed that his suicide was related to it, and the media ran with the story, turning the narrative to D&D encourages its players to engage in demonic worship, casting spells, and summoning demons and other monsters. However, James wasn't the only suicide connected to Dungeons & Dragons. Tragically, Irving Lee Pulling II, often going by his nickname, Bink, shot himself in the chest to end his life. He enjoyed D&D and was quite involved in role-playing games in general, though his mother thought D&D was directly responsible for his suicide.
Until that night, they had never heard of the game Dungeons & Dragons.
We went into the kitchen, and there on the table were much of the Dungeons & Dragons material, along with this curse he had received in the game that day that he died.
Your soul is mine. I choose the time.
Irving Lee Pulling was a talented student who participated in the Gifted and Talented program at Patrick Henry High School. He had trouble, though, making friends. Irving had a lot of problems, according to a classmate named Victoria. They weren't related to the game, she said. Irving allegedly tried to run for a position in the school, but no one would agree to serve as his campaign manager. He was also unaware of his sexuality, and there were even allegations that he might have been gay. Of course, there was never any evidence to support these rumors. In 1980, the publication of the book, Michelle Remembers, introduced readers to a group of deadly Canadian Satanists. Her recollections of being abused as a child by Satanists are detailed in the book Michelle Remembers, written by a Canadian psychotherapist and his former patient, Michelle. Despite the fact that its outrageous claims were swiftly dismissed, the book was a top seller, and all of a sudden, it appeared like dread could be lurking anywhere. It described the incredible allegations made by Michelle, who claimed that a group of Satanists in 1950s Victoria, Canada, exposed her to several months of horrific ritual abuse. She was ultimately taken by the group that would later be recognized as a satanic cult, with its headquarters located in Victoria, Canada. She claimed that she had suppressed the recollections for many years until consulting with psychotherapist Lawrence Pastor. While hypnotized, Michelle started to piece together a horrific story of murder, torture, kidnapping, and abuse. She claimed to have been taken from her willing family and groomed to take part in a ritual to call the devil himself, one in which she witnessed the murder of children and was forced to eat the remains, covered in dead baby parts and locked in a cage with snakes. She started recalling an orgy party that had taken place in a nearby home, where she saw a group of people beating a woman to death with clubs. And she remembers what she calls an evil man named Malachi, who parked a car with the dead woman's body in it, and then faked an accident on the highway in order to cover up the murder. She then remembered being made to consume the victim's body's ashes. She talked about ceremonies that took place in the city's historic Ross Bay Cemetery at night, including being buried in an uncovered grave while a cat meowed and a woman in a dark gown chanting above her. She recalled a strange rebirth ceremony in a nearby mausoleum when one of her tormentors licked her as the others hissed and danced around her. In the end, Michelle claimed that she was saved by the supernatural help of Jesus and the Virgin Mary, who came to her when she was participating in one of these rituals. After the book became a bestseller, people started questioning the authenticity of her claims. And while she was unable to prove any of this actually happened, it was too late. Didn't matter anymore. Fear was cast upon the world and made the general public fear that maybe this was happening in their neighborhood. But that's not the end of media. You see, in May of 1985, a feature on Satanism in the program 2020 discussed animal mutilations that were clearly used in some kind of bizarre ritual, rock music that was associated with devil worship, and satanic graffiti with backward messages in popular songs.
I heard something there.
All right, listen for I Live with Satan, exactly. You might want to turn it up just a little out here on the floor.
Did you hear that?
I Live with Satan, listen. Okay.
As I Live with Satan.
How many in the audience heard that? All right.
Now let's get that vote on videotape here. How many actually heard that?
We'll give you 666.
Yeah.
3 years later, NBC ordered its own program that was presented by Gerardo Riviera and featured descriptions of horrifying murders, child abuse testimonies, and an interview with Ozzy Osbourne. Nearly 2 million American homes tuned in to this program. The satanic hysteria was generated by a wide range of different sources. Each of these tales may stand alone in its own episode. So, if you want any more information on any one of these particular topics, let me know. But without a doubt, all of these incidents set the world on fire and contributed to a panic that is still felt today.
So I think I have the same kind of bias when it comes to people having found lost memories. So I always like it when somebody has contributing evidence with a found...
Sure, with any new claims.
So what I would like is if she had something like a journal that had unusual things from that time, or there was missing gaps where people would go without seeing her for weeks, and then everybody was be talking... We ask her, hey, do you remember way back when we were doing both working together at such and such place and you went missing for a week? And they're like, no, I have no idea what you're talking about. And if they have all of these gaps in their memory where they went missing at the same time, so they had these gaps of missing attendance somewhere and gaps of memory of their missing attendance. And then if those things kind of line up with a then lost memory, then I'm more likely to go, well, that adds credibility. So I would have to look more at this Michelle lady, but her testimony alone, I would say, to me, that's sketchy. As for D&D, here's the thing. Having looked a little bit at D&D, not being an avid player myself, I have come to the conclusion that it is about as varied as any sort of video game. You know, the video game world is very diverse, right?
Yep.
And you can have Pokemon, or you can have first-person shooters, or you can have games where you go around and just in a free world and do things like build stuff in, what's that one? Minecraft. You know, very diverse. And it would seem as though D&D is almost as diverse as the whole field of video games entirely. Because you can put yourself in any sort of world and do anything that you want in it. It's very open, as far as I can tell. So I can see how you could have one game that was legit demonic. So you could have a cult go, you know what we're going to do? Let's make our very cult-like activity. Let's just go ahead and make D&D out of that. But you could also have someone make it very benign as well. So I don't discount that you couldn't have demonic D&D.
I'm sure, but I think at the end of the day, when it comes to the satanic panic, I think it was just a target, an easy target.
So you think there's a further conspiracy behind it, that there was maybe a goal that people were going, you know what, let's create a satanic panic to try and drum up support for a cause? Because if you think about it, that's a great way that people use to gain control. They create an enemy that wasn't there before. They start having people see their neighbor as their enemy.
And I then think they that's exactly it, Conrad.
Ah, so there's a conspiracy behind the conspiracy I see here. So what is this conspiracy behind? What do you think it could be? Would it be religious leaders trying to
I think it is, yeah.
Attendance?
Because at the time,
the media was in on it.
The media was in on it, but at the same time, Conrad, within the same decade, the Christian network just took off on not just radio, but TV. Now, you could reach a lot of people with TV. Not just radio, but with TV, right? You could give them these messages. You could tell, you could look straight into the camera and tell them, your son or daughter, who is playing D&D, is committing treason against the Lord or something like that, you know? So I think in order to get more viewers and more of a general public on Christianity side, doesn't matter what domination, basically all the same. I think they were exactly doing that. They were trying to gain more control, bigger following. What better target there was at that time than D&D? When I was a little kid, I was forbidden to watch Harry Potter. This was, what, 2000? 2001? Maybe not a little kid. I was like a preteen. Let's just say preteen. Yeah, I was forbidden to watch Harry Potter or any movie or show that...
I was as well.
...show that depicted witchcraft. But that was because my family is super religious.
Another theory on who it might have been. So, the whole satanic thing being... Because the media and, I would say, organized religion normally don't get along very well, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, that's true.
So, it would have to be a group larger than the two of them combined. So, for them to start working on the same side. So, it would have to be somebody making money on it, I'm assuming. Because I don't think it's the government. Government wasn't pushing it, as far as I can tell. Because, in my opinion, Operation Mockingbird started a little bit later than this. So, I wouldn't consider the government and the media the same at this time.
Well, who do you think did it?
You want to do a drum roll? I think it is business. I think it is somebody trying to make a quick buck.
So do you think whoever the company was behind making the D&D boards and dice and all of that, do you think they drummed up publicity?
No, because I would say it was probably more of a competitor, if anything. But no, what sells? Violence sells. If it bleeds, it leads, right?
Sure.
So it's big business trying to cash in on people being scared. So if you can create a panic and that sort of thing, then you can sell a cure.
That sounds a lot like COVID.
So the church is doing it. They've got this whole new media that you're talking about, right? They've got to sell this new media. If they want to have more than just like a 5-minute segment every day, they've got to have something to say. So, and you've got to scare people, keep them engaged there. The media loves it. It doesn't matter what's going on. If people are scared, they like it because then you're more likely to tune in.
I see.
So that's what they're independent of each other, but they both have similar goals. Fear gets people to pay attention. But who else makes money off of this whole satanic panic, right?
Oh, who else?
Yeah. If you're trying to keep your kids from getting into dangerous stuff and be very safe, there's a whole industry about how to keep your kids safe. And put in a little bunker.
And what industry is
It's part
is
of
that?
The whole... So I'm adding in a whole new thing that just kind of rang into my head back when I was hearing all of this. The helicopter parent, right? We were talking about it. We weren't allowed to watch Harry Potter growing up, right?
Yep.
Were you allowed to walk to school, Eric?
No.
Why not?
I don't know. But I was dangerous? Always... I don't know. My parents never said anything, but I was dropped off every day and picked up.
Could
never
you have
even
to school?
No, it was too far. But I wasn't even allowed to ride the bus. School bus. Mm-hmm. I was super overprotected by my parents.
Well, that's a thing that is statistically shown is there are kids who are not allowed to go to school on foot or on a bicycle or ride the school bus. That the parents are more and more protective and fearful for the kids while their kids are alone. So they give the kids less and less agency. And that led to a lot of different industries around safety. Well, first off, the car industry is one that made a lot of money off of people driving their kids everywhere and not allowing their kids to bicycle. So if you're driving kids to school events, to their friend's house, the more you shepherd your kids, the more that you're driving. The less agency that kids have, the more that the parents have to do things to buy stuff to keep them safe at home. You've got to buy fences to put up around your house. There's just a whole industry geared around keeping your kid locked away and isolated.
Thank you so much for listening to Bizarre Conspiracies. If you want to email me or Conrad, you can do so at bizarreconspiracies@gmail.com. That's all one word, bizarreconspiracies@gmail.com. Again, thank you for listening. And as always, we will catch you in the next episode.